Welcome to the Relief Society program on the Mormon Channel. I'm Sharon Eubank. Today we'll be discussing the history of the Church's welfare program and the Relief Society's role in the history. Joining me in the studio today is Sister Julie B. Beck, the General Relief Society President of the Church. She's also a member of the General Welfare Committee of the Church. And also with us is Elder Glenn L. Rudd, who has served as a general authority and worked in welfare for more than 65 years. He was the manager of Welfare Square for more than 25 years and served on the General Welfare Committee. In 1992, Elder Rudd was commissioned by the First Presidency to write a history of the church welfare system, which is titled Pure Religion, the Story of Church Welfare Since 1930. Elder Rudd is 92 years old, and he still has an office in the welfare department, and he works every day working on additional histories for the welfare program. Thank you both for joining us. This is a historic and a happy day.
Thank you so much. This is a highlight of my life to be able to be here with Elder Rudd.
Well, thank you. I'm honored. I feel wonderful to be here with you two sisters.
This is a historic day, I think, in the studio. This is a great thing.
Thank you.
Elder Rudd, I wanted to ask you, you have worked in welfare for more than 65 years. The whole history of it is your lifetime, lots of it. And if you were going to tell your daughters and your granddaughters and your great-granddaughters about what's the role of Relief Society in helping care for the poor and the needy, what would you tell them?
Well, I have a lot of granddaughters, and I've got some great-granddaughters that are now getting up to the age of them. I think they've all been taught properly because of their mothers. I've always loved Relief Society. I can't visualize the church taking care of the poor and the needy or helping people with any kind of service without the Relief Society. But I just want you to know that for some reason or other, I've always been grateful for Relief Society. Maybe I'll tell you one little story. As a young boy, 12 years of age, I was wide awake, and I was always interested in what was going on. I watched my bishop. He was an old, fine man, a German man. English wasn't very good, but he was a great bishop. He served about 12 years. And Sister Richens was our Relief Society president, and she served 12 years. When there was a program, when there was anything that had to be done in our ward, and it was a big ward of 1,000 people, and the bishop had his hands full with people, old people, and rather poor people in the sense of not having much money. They were good people. But I watched Sister Richens and the bishop, and I was fascinated, and I've never forgotten. Back in that's back in the 1930s and into the 30s, and I was fascinated with what a great Relief Society president can do. Now, in my ward, when the ward was 100 years old, it's one of the original wards. Brigham Young started 19 wards when they first came into the valley. It still exists. When my ward was 100 years old, I became the bishop. I was in there 10 long years, and it was a great experience because I was doing what that old German bishop, I'd watched him do. And I had a great Relief Society president. I had two of them, one for 5 years, and I thought, nowhere in the world would you get a better one. And then they moved, and she had to move, and another one came. And it came by pure inspiration, and I called a young lady, just the same age as I. She wasn't even 30 years of age. She served the next 5 years. It was absolutely wonderful. She'd been deserted by an unfaithful husband, and her little boy, and they were in desperate need themselves. But my goodness, what a great Relief Society president she was. And she's still alive, 80. She's close to 90 now, but I've never forgotten her nor the work they did. But just repeating it, to me, the bishop and the Relief Society president was the backbone of the ward. And I really believe that.
Well, Elder Rudd, when I was first called to be the General Relief Society president, I received an assignment to serve on the General Welfare Committee and the Executive Committee of Welfare for the Church, and I didn't have any idea what that meant. I'd been in Relief Society presidencies in the stake and ward level, but that was a little terrifying to be assigned. When do you find out that you're serving with the presiding bishopric, with the first presidency in the 12, and making welfare decisions? So I started to learn about the welfare program and the welfare department of the church, and had a lot of good instruction from the managing director and the people who took care of the storehouse and the desert industries and lots of the parts and pieces of the welfare system that we have. It was beautiful, and I loved it, but I didn't have the spirit of it in my heart. Then one day I came to you, and I said, would you teach me about welfare? And I have to credit Brother Rudd with giving me the real testimony of welfare in the church and being my trainer in what that meant, teaching me the principles. Now, I'll tell you why I value that so much, because of the people who trained Elder Rudd. Maybe you could tell us some of the people who taught you about the spirit of this.
Well, I'm happy to hear you say that. I hope I taught you the right things.
You were the best. You were the source.
Well, let me just say, I was born into a family that was a good family. My father wasn't active in the church. He was very, very hard of hearing, and he was not an active man, but he loved the church, and he did a lot for the church. But my mother taught me a lot about helping people. And I happened to grow up during the Depression, where I had the privilege of seeing poor people. I mean, people destitute, hungry people. And I think that all I learned through watching during the depths of the Depression in 1930, 31, 32. It was wonderful as a young boy to learn that there were other kind of people in the world. Now, all my friends were families that didn't have anything. We were fortunate. My father had a good business. I was the lucky boy. I learned to share everything with them, but I never thought about it. When I was 9 years old, a man by the name of Harold B. Lee came to see my mother. And I remember he came in the front room of our home, and being a nosy kid, I stood around to listen. And I remember him standing in the front room by the piano talking to my mother. And he was then in the presidency of the Pioneer Stake. And a year or so later, he was the stake president. It was wonderful to just look at that great big man, the big broad shoulders and his dark hair. And I was fascinated. I did not realize the magnetism of that man on me. But he and I became friends, and all the time I was a deacon, a teacher, a priest, and a young elder, he was my stake president. And I never missed a priesthood meeting. In fact, I never missed any meetings. Particularly a stake priesthood meeting, because I had a chance to go hear the stake presidency and Brother Lee and his counselors. Now, it's in that area of time that there was so much poverty and idleness. And Brother Lee and the brethren prayed hard to do something. They had hundreds of men. Brother Lee said he had 7,500 people in his stake, and half of them were unemployed, at least 50%. And he says sometimes 60% of the people had no income. And it was necessary for the priesthood to do something. It took the priesthood to solve the problems of unemployment and so forth. And as a result of what Brother Lee and his counselors did, they got involved in a program of their own to solve the problems. And after 4 years of having a little storehouse and everything theirself, of organizing itself, then President Grant turned it over to them, and they gave Brother Lee the assignment to make it a church-wide program. And he was told, don't change it much. Just do what you've been doing for 4 years. And the first presence, he'd go down to where Brother Lee started the program. They'd go down visiting, trying to find out if there was a way to have a general welfare program for the whole church. So Brother Lee, I guess, is the first one that became a teacher. I knew him as a boy. He knew me, went out of his way. I went on my mission, and he married us and took care of us. And my oldest son is named Lee. And Brother Lee never, ever left me alone from the time we were then till the day he died. I traveled with him many, many times, and I had a little business. And he was happy that I had my own business, but he didn't want me to stay there. And after I'd struggled in a business for a while, he made the big change and said, you quit doing what you're doing. You're the new manager of Welfare Square. And he said, this is the big job in the church. You work for me, and I'll help you. You go run Welfare Square and change it. It was run down. It was the first Welfare Square, and it was all built out of old material, needs painting and cleaning up. It wasn't a place to take people to show much. I got the assignment to tear it down and to rebuild it, which was the next thing which I did in the next few years. But I had Brother Lee all the time, and I had him till I could get to him. And he'd call me all the time. He began to want to take me with him, and he came one day to my home. And he said to my wife, can we borrow your husband for a little while? She said, yeah, you can borrow him. It lasted 35 years. he sent me out teaching the welfare program. I was able to teach the welfare program because I was heavily involved in the work I was doing at Welfare Square. So anyway, that's how. And then along came Brother Moyle, and he was a magnificent individual with great heart, a rather well-to-do man, but a man who did love to help people. And when I realized he was very wealthy, I also realized that he was complete control of his wealth. His wealth didn't mean anything. In fact, when he died, I don't think Brother Moyle had much left. He didn't have an expense account. The first time he took me on a trip, I asked him about it, because they had given me, so if I ate meals, I could charge him while we were traveling. He said to me, I don't know what an expense account is. I don't charge the church anything. I just travel and go. And he did that for all the years he was in the 12. Brother Romney came along, and he was a harder man to understand, but he was a great, great soul. And along the course, it was Brother Lee, Brother Moyle, Brother Ryan. But the interesting thing is, because of Brother Lee, I got to meet President Clark on several occasions. President Clark fell in love with Welfare Square and what we were doing. And we really built a great Welfare Square, and it lasted for 40 years. Then we tore it all down again, and now the third Welfare Square we built in the 1990s. But what I had the part of doing, along with great stake presidents. I was actually a paid employee, but the stake presidents ran it. And the stake presidents were the regional leaders. They were the one that okayed everything. So I did have some good leaders. I went to the university for a while and had some pretty good professors, but when I stop and think of President Clark and President McKay too, and then, of course, President Grant. I got to meet President Grant on many occasions, and what a great man he was. But then the other men became my professors, and they became my leaders. And traveling with them, traveling all over the church, week after week after week, conferences, different ones, I was being taught all the time. But the nice thing was that I knew pretty well about welfare. And they taught me more, but they kept asking me questions. Some of those brethren hadn't had a lot of welfare experience. Brother Lee had, but it was marvelous to help people. Now, there's three or four of the 12 that say I taught them the welfare program. I don't know if I did, but they all came to spend time when they first were called in, and I've been grateful for that. And so when Sister Beck says I helped teach her, that's a great honor to me. Makes me feel good.
Just pause and think now about that story and that catalog of teaching that went into Elder Rudd, And to be a new General Relief Society president and to have multiple opportunities to sit with Elder Rudd and have him teach not just the principles of welfare, but the spirit of welfare and where it came from, that means something to me. That ties it back to great priesthood leaders in the church and anchors me in those teachings in a way that it wouldn't be there without that understanding.
You know, the thing I believe the Lord blessed me. As a boy, I saw the spiritual side of what the brethren were trying to do. I was in the first storehouse. I was on the first welfare farm. I was in it as a boy before it became church-wide from 36 in that area. But I saw what was happening to people. I got to go back to Sister Richens and Bishop Rashawn. The welfare program, they used it extensively, what they had. And it was marvelous to realize that lives were being changed spiritually. The welfare program is, we talk about peas and beans and corn and all these things, but the real backbone of what we do is when we change people. Now, Brother Lee gave a marvelous talk to the Relief Society in a General Relief Society meeting in the Tabernacle where he talked about this great program that the Lord established where he put the delicate work. He didn't give it to professionals. He gave it to Relief Society women and bishops. And he talked about mothers who had raised children. They were skilled. And he said, because next to the Master himself, there are none in his church who have more lovely touch, more complete understanding of the hearts and the lives of individuals than Relief Society women. Now, that's an old talk, 1946, when the welfare program was only 10 years old. But
That's still true, though,
isn't it? It is true. It's a great statement. It really is.
You told me once that that the poor would always be with us and those who had needs would be with us. And you said that the Lord He places them there to sanctify a bishop and a Relief Society president. Would you like to talk about that?
Well, yeah. Actually, it's exactly true. The people we bless as bishops bless us. A bishop changes during the time he's a bishop. He can't help many people before the people begin to get into it. You know, he ought to love them all, but we're not all born that way. Sometimes people have to learn. Sometimes a bishop's been given a lot of hard instructions. He's a little bit tough, and he doesn't really have the feeling, but it comes if he wants it to come. And the same with a Relief Society president. And actually, I say this in kindness. I think the sisters need the training almost more than the men do, because they're struggling with their own problems and running their own family. And sometimes they see a bishop helping people, and they sometimes compare their own lives with the people. They have to get lost. And when they get lost in taking care of the needy, now it was Savior that said we would always have the poor, and we always will have. But the poor keep changing. And let me stop and say there's a big difference between being poor and needy. The scriptures talk about the poor and the needy, but they're different people. A poor person has poor ways. A poor person has a poor way of spending what little money they have. A poor person isn't schooled in running their family. They're not schooled in finances and these other things. Poor people are always in trouble. Everybody, at one time or another, is a needy person. That's all a man needs sometimes is a job, and you've solved his problem. A needy person, we've all been needy at times. Everybody has certain needs, and these needs have to be handled. But everybody has a hunger. Every mother in the Relief Society, every Relief Society mother has those same hungers. Every wife wants to be loved. Every wife wants to be understood and appreciated. And when people are taught that the greatest hungers in life is not food and clothing, people can get by. they don't get by very long without us helping them. But you do need to feed the hungers of the people, and that's why the Lord established the Relief Society. And right off the beginning, the prophet gave us that. He told us why we had a Relief Society. They were to take care of the people. They were to go do that. So I honestly believe with all my heart that the Lord watches over Relief Society women all the time. And one thing about it, they never run out of work. I've never known a Relief Society president that didn't have more work to do. But the work is what we call service. Service is the great thing in the world, really is. Now, let me just stop a minute, go back and say, well, as a bishop, I want to tell you about this second Relief Society president. We were helping a lot of people. We had a ward with between 84 and 85, 86 widows all the time, old people. The ward was full of old people. We had over 1,200 people, sometimes up to 1,300 people. We had lots of old people, lots of really financially poor people. But they weren't all poor. They were needy people. And the interesting thing was that there is a way to bless a poor person. You have to teach him a lot of things. Poor person, you have to teach him all how to handle how to do their things. But the needy, all you have to do is love them and then help whatever their need is. And as we were helping 30, 40, 50 families every single week, my Relief Society president was in the home of 50 families every week. That means she went out every single day. Fortunately, she was able to do this. And she needed a little help herself to begin with, but that got solved. But she came to me one day. We were signing bishop's orders that she'd make out. And I said to her one day, I said, Marie, we've helped those people for three or four or five weeks. And they're not doing anything. They don't seem to respond. They won't come out to church. And I said, maybe we've helped them long enough. And anyway, I finally said to her, maybe we ought to quit helping them. And then the next week, when she came with the orders, there was her order. And I said, Marie, I thought we decided we weren't going to help them. And she said, Bishop, we didn't decide that. You did. But I didn't agree with you, and I've written an order, and I want you to sign it. And, you know, I wish every Relief Society president could have – she wasn't afraid of me, but she was a courageous woman who let me know that she knew what she was doing. Incidentally, a couple of weeks later, a great thing happened with that particular family, and we got them active in the church. But we were in the business of blessing people's lives.
That's an interesting point that you've just made, because I'm thinking about Sister Beck, and at a general level, you are with the presiding bishopric in that council, but that's a pattern that's reflected in every single ward, Relief Societies and bishops counseling together over the needs of the poor and the needy. And here's a good example of a Relief Society president who gave some good counsel, even though, there was a difference of opinion. And I wonder how you feel about counseling and what Relief Society presidents and bishops do together.
I think the model for this is in the scriptures. The genesis of it is in Luke chapter 10, where the Savior had already called his apostles and they were out fulfilling their commission, and then he called the 70 and he told them that they'd be able to teach and cast out devils and perform miracles, and he sent them and they came back with a great report about that. Then right after, he has this wonderful story of the Good Samaritan, which begins with the question of what shall I do to inherit eternal life? Yeah. And he gives this wonderful parable about someone who was in need and someone else who came and took care of short-term needs, the immediate things that need to be taken care of, and then set him up for a long-term independence and care. That's the principle of that story. And right after that, and I don't think it's an accident, we have the story of Mary and Martha, which I think is one of the most misunderstood stories in scriptures. That was the Savior saying to Martha, "You're doing a good thing." She had invited him into her home. Isn't that what we're told to do? She was serving. Isn't that what we're told to do? So he wasn't saying those are bad things, but he said there's something more. There's something more that you can be part of. And this, to me, was the beginning of the Master counseling with these women, saying, you can be my disciples and help perform a great work and learn to do things in my name, and you are authorized to do that. We see, if we follow the story of Mary and Martha, that they both were instrumental disciples in his life, and they bore testimony of him and his work, and they understood that principle of caring for those who have needs. So that the counseling together has to take place, it didn't just happen in Bible times. That has to continue in that same way today, or the Lord's needy and the poor won't be taken care of.
Absolutely true. You mentioned the Good Samaritan story. You know, that's a magnificent story. Now, I take a little different view than a lot of people. I think the Savior gave that just for us in our day. See, what happened when the Good Samaritan came, the rabbi and the other man had no compassion. And if you don't, if a Relief Society president or bishop doesn't have a compassion or a feeling, spiritual feeling, they're not going to help anybody. So those two went on their way. But then along came a Samaritan, and he belonged to a different group of people, really. He went down and did 8 distinct things, which any Latter-day Saint bishop can do. First thing, he had compassion, then he went to them. Then he bound up their wounds, and then he gave him a drink, and he took care of him, and he put him on his horse or whatever, put him on. He furnished transportation and took him to a place and put him in a place to sleep and paid for it and said, I'll come back and pay. But what he did, every Latter-day Saint bishop can do. And I think that story is the backbone of what we're supposed to be doing, bishops and Relief Society presidents. I'm glad you mentioned that.
Well, I think you mentioned about the poor, and what they need is to be taught. And Relief Society has the leading role in the teaching. I think it's underutilized, and we don't value the importance of the teaching that has to go on every day, week by week, by the Relief Society to help people so they won't become poor, and help those who are poor become better and stronger. If they don't have take on that responsibility to teach, who will do it? Who's going to carry that load to help them know how to live the gospel in their homes?
Well, that's a good question. Let me go back now to say something. It's hard to conceive of the church without Relief Society. I mean, we just wouldn't be a complete church. And so we're happy to have that. There was a time when there wasn't any Relief Society here in the Salt Lake Valley. They came across the plains, and for the next 10, 12, 3 years, 15 years, they struggled. And then about 1866, Brigham Young and the Brethren organized Relief Society, had the organized a Relief Society in every single branch or ward in the church. And I've been reading some history, and I'm interested that from then on, the church moved like it had never moved before, and we were really well organized. So the Relief Societies were organized so we could have a president who the Lord could teach and bless. And all over the church now, hundreds, even thousands of marvelous sisters who are constantly in touch with the Lord, and the Lord is teaching them. And as a result of the leadership, leadership's the greatest thing in the church. It is in the mission work and everywhere, everything we do. But when you have a good Relief Society president, one who, when I say good, they're all good, but they're all learning, and when you get one who really understands what their challenge is, not what their work is, but what their challenge is, then they do some marvelous things. and they do some hard things, but they change the world. And like I go back to when I was a boy, I thought there was the Bishop Relief Society. Then I went on a mission, and the mission president sent me out among the Maori people in a branch of about 300 people, and I didn't see any men. They were all out shearing sheep. And the women were all home alone, struggling with a bunch of kids. And I all of a sudden realized that the backbone of this branch I was working in, the whole was run by the Relief Society's president. She was really running. The president, the branch president, was out shearing sheep. They were gone for 4 or 5 months, and then they came home. And it was interesting that when they left food for their families, their wives and children. But they didn't get paid anything till the work was done. They would come home close to Christmas time. They were through shearing. When they came home, they had all their money. But the women had been using up their what they had. And it was wonderful because I remember as a boy saying to one of them, she said something about food. She said, I've only got 3 cans of food left. And I said, what are you going to do when they're gone? She said, well, some of the other sisters have 4 cans and 5 cans, and we've all got 1 or 2. We're all going to run out on the same day. She said, here we, everybody knows everybody, and we're all going to be in the same problem at the same time. But by then, the men will be home, and we'll go out and buy up all the food again and start all over again. And, you know, they began to teach this boy from downtown Salt Lake. Well, all of a sudden, my life began to change with what those Maori people would teach me about loving one another and taking care of one another. I'd only been there a week or 7, 8 days when I was rushed over to a home because there was a lady having a baby, and they said the baby's, she's hurt herself and the baby's premature. And they took me into the bedroom, and I was standing right behind the midwife, who was also the Relief Society president. And she took this tiny, tiny infant and turned around and handed it to me. I'd never seen a baby before. And she says, now name it and bless it quick. And my companion, I said, why do we need to hurry? He said, well, it's going to die quick. And I said, well, let's get it to the hospital. We were only a few miles away from a hospital, but they said, no, there's no use. Little baby's too young, too little. Well, I argued like everything. I finally got him into a car and went to the hospital. The baby lived 12 hours. But I'll never forget a Relief Society president. She was delivering most of the children. Rarely did they go to a hospital. Rarely did they have doctors. The priest did give blessings, and the people had faith. And I began to see things happening as a young missionary that I'd never dreamed of right downtown Salt Lake where I'd been born and raised. And I've always been grateful for that experience. And fortunately, I've been able to go back to that country, New Zealand, time and time again with one job after another. And I love the people because the people taught me what genuine love is. The word charity and love, I've had a hard time knowing the difference between charity and love, but there is some difference. But charity, it just doesn't fail. That's your motto. That's what it ought to be. Brother Lee said a strange thing. He said, charity is a hungry man who has a bone, and he gives it to the dog when the dog's just as hungry as he is. He's willing to share a bone with a dog even when the dog's as hungry as he is. But there, charity takes a lot. Charity takes real, deep, honest love. But charity is with us, and it's just great. Now, Let me say, we've changed the welfare program. After the first 40 years, we were building projects and building storehouses and doing a lot of things. And then we changed, and we don't have all the projects. We don't need them all now. We do bigger and better. We learned a lot of things. We don't have all the physical facilities we used to have. We still have employment offices and the social service work and so on. But the welfare work that we do today, we used to send from my stake, when I was in the stake presidency, every Saturday we sent 20 men down on Utah Lake to work on a welfare farm. They had to drive an hour to get there, 4 to 45 minutes an hour to get there, and then they worked. One day that all changed, and we didn't have a welfare farm anymore. And they said, what do we do? There's no welfare program. What we didn't teach, where we made a mistake, is there is a welfare program. And the welfare program starts in our own home and in our own ward and in our own stake. And there are hundreds of welfare projects that need to be done. There are old people who can't clean their yards. There are old people who can't repair their fences. There are old people who need a paint job. There are in their homes. There are poor people who don't have the money to do things. And I used to take, when I was in the state, I'd take Bishop around his ward. I said, I want to see what your ward looks like. He said, well, you've been in the building. I'm not talking about the building. I want to know what your people, who lives there? Well, they're old people. And I said, well, why is there a yard like it is? He said, I don't know. I said, you know, that yard ought to be cleaned. What a great project for a group of young women in the church, the young women's program, or for a group of priests, or the elders' quorum. We'd go from house to house, and I'd put, what, that garage, who's that belong to? Well, they're old. The garage, look, I said, it ought to be painted. And I didn't tell him what to do, but I just said, you know, if I was a bishop, I'd help get it painted. Before we got through going around the ward, he had about 50 or 60 projects. They were all home right there. We didn't have to travel. Now, when we take care of the widows and the single women and the members that are, and even the non-members, and we do special things in our own ward, in our own branch, when we've taken care of those people, then we've done real great welfare work. And we don't have to travel. And we don't have to have all the facilities. And I think if people down in Tennessee or in Mongolia or down in Peru, you know, they have a welfare program. They have people that are poor people, and they have people that are needy people. And you don't have to have all the facilities that we're fortunate enough to have in some places. And so we need to realize that welfare work is still with us, always will be. And there is a way to shift gears and teach people to love one another and be kind to each other. I've been out to almost 900 stakes in the church where I've met with the Relief Society presidents and the bishoprics to teach the welfare program. And for over a period of many, many years, I met the best people, the people who were doing the greatest work, really.
So what would you say to a Relief Society president who is inexperienced, and she's probably working with a bishop who's inexperienced, and they don't know how to talk together? Where does she start if she's got an idea of the needs in the ward and what's coming out of the homes? How would you advise one of your granddaughters to start?
She should first of all read the little booklet called Providing in the Lord's Way, which tells how we operate the welfare program, so she understands it. And she ought to understand some of the scriptures and so forth. But she can help a bishop more than anybody in the ward. But she has to figure out how to do it. Now, I maintain that if you want to know something, is all you have to do if you're living right is ask the Lord. You got there. She's going to have some tough problems, and she's going to worry. I wonder how I can tell the bishop. If she just go in and give it a try, the Lord will open the way up. He's never going to leave a Relief Society president with a problem that he's not willing to help. And the inspiration is absolutely marvelous in the church. You know, the Lord tells us things day in and day out. And one of the greatest things a person can do is learn how to pray and learn how to listen to the Lord. And I think a Relief Society president who might have the spirit, that might have the real spirit of welfare work, if the bishop hasn't quite got that far yet, I think she would be wrong if she didn't have the courage to really be very blunt and talk. Bishops can be taught. Not everybody understands just because they got a job.
It takes time.
You know, you see things he doesn't see. And I want you to be, as a Relief Society president, you don't judge that bishop, but you can recognize that he's not real anxious. He's not real anxious to get out and help people. Why don't you see if you can get him to go with you to a home? If you could get him into a home where you could point out where he would see a problem, he would begin to change. Now, if you have courage and you are willing to talk to the bishop without being afraid of him, just say to him, "Bishop, there's four or five families that I wish you could come with me, or we go." Maybe he'd say, "Well, I'll just go see." Well, then say, "Go." She doesn't have to take her, but I think she has to help do some teaching. When a man's called to be a bishop, he's a bishop because he's called. They set him apart, and he lives at level one. He's a bishop because he's been made a bishop. After he learns his job, after he begins to study and pray and he begins to fall in love with the people, he moves from level one, he moves up to being a fairly competent bishop because he's now learned some things. And so he moves up from just being there because he's got a title. He's there because he belongs there. And after a while, he mellows and he begins to love everybody. And his personality is beginning to change. And his character is beginning to change because the spirit of his great calling is lifting him up as an individual. And he moves up to what I call the third level, which is the level of character, the level of real greatness. Now, some bishops never get past one, level one. Some get on two. I've seen some bishops who have become great bishops, but they stubbed their toe a little bit for a while. They didn't quite catch on because they're snowed under. And I guess that happens to Relief Society. Oh, it does. You get so many people to go to at once. But there's so much to do. But I tell you, we grow. One of the great purposes of the great purpose of the church is for us all to grow. It's for us to become better, more wonderful. And so the Lord gives us the opportunities.
I had this wonderful sister who was taking care of her mother, who was in her late 90s. And her mother said, "I'm too old to do anything."
Yeah.
And to contribute much. She used to make a lot of things for the humanitarian center. She says, "Now I can't do it." But her daughter said, can you crochet a little square for me?" It was about 8x8. And her mother said, "Yes, I can do that." So then when she had that done, she said, "Do another one." And then she did another. And then the daughter took all those squares and put it together and made a big blanket out of it. She said, "See, you can still do something. You just didn't know. You have to do a little bit at a time." And I thought that was a great principle.
Oh, it is.
That daughter helping her mother, understanding she still needed to contribute. She needed to feel valued and important in her life. But she could only do a little square at a time.
Now, you know, we sometimes make mistakes as bishops and even Relief Society presidents and leaders. We want people to do things, but sometimes they can't. They just don't know, but they need a little encouragement like that, just that. One day, the stake president brought a lady by the name of Dean to Welfare Square. He said, "This lady's had some emotional problems, and she can't hold a job, and she's having a hard time. Can you give her some work?" And I said, "Certainly." So we put her in an office, and we taught her to do some things. 3 or 4 months passed, and she just had a change because we were teaching her to do little jobs. And she came to me and said, "You know, I think I'm feeling good enough to go get a job." So I did a strange thing. I said to her, okay, you go uptown to the Brigham Young Monument, and on the corner is a bank, Zion's Bank, and they hire people all the time. And then go, next door to it is a furniture store. And then I named another, and then there was a little eating place, and I said, it's called Keeley's. They hire 8 waitresses. I said, all of it, I gave her about 10 places to go. So she went. And I didn't see her. She didn't come back. I called the bishop, and I said, what happened to Berdine? He said, well, she came home. She's upset. And I said, what happened? Bring her back. So he brought her back, and I got her in my office. I said, Berdine, did you go? She said, I went every place she told me. I said, what did they do when you went in? Well, I knocked on the door, and I knew they didn't need me, so I didn't go in. And that poor sister went all the way down that street over here on Main Street, and she never went in a single place until she got discouraged and went home. I immediately came alive. So we got her back, let her work another month or two, and then I said, now, Berdine, I think you can get a job. And so I sent a sister with her. And I said, this lady, I called her in. I said, now you take Berdine. Berdine's a wonderful woman. You introduce her. You take her into those places, introduce her and say she needs to work and she could be a good employee if you'll give her a chance. You go take her and take her by the hand and take her in. Do you know, she had a job within half of a day because I sent a lady with her to show her how to do it. And, you know, that taught me a great lesson.
Well, that's a lot of what we do. I think that's why we have the organization of
Relief Society. Well, that's why you have all of it.
So that we have enough helpers to help with the little things we need.
I think that we're doing a great work. I know we are. But we need leadership, and we need to teach and train people. And we need to never quit teaching that the spiritual things of the world are the important things. The welfare program, as the Brother Romney said, is the single most spiritual thing we do. And I challenged him on it because we were pals, and he convinced me. Now, I believe that. Spirituality, the building of spirituality is the work of the Relief Society. It's the work of the priesthood. We need to know that. There's hundreds of stories and over all these 70 years that I've been helping people in that, it's just great for me to remember what I remember. And I've written so much stuff.
I've read a lot of it. But I want you to know, Brother Red, that I count it as one of the great honors of my life that I know you, that I've been taught by you, and I continue to be taught by you. And some of it's through the words, and some of it's through the Spirit. And I think if I can get a little bit close to what you feel about Relief Society and what it was organized to do, I'll be a lot better president, and I'll provide the leadership that the Lord needs us to
and
provide.
And see, you're in that position. You go out and you teach people. And teach welfare. You know, I've said to you ladies before, I worry when the Relief Society women quit teaching welfare and maybe get worried on other things. But never forget that the Relief Society has the assignment to take care of the poor and the needy and those people who are struggling. That came from the Prophet Joseph back in Nauvoo when he started the Relief Society. That's their challenge. So thanks to you.
Thank you very, very much.
This has been such a good discussion, and as I've listened to you talk, and because my office is next door to you, I hear you talk about welfare almost every day. But the church is lucky to have your book, Pure Religion, where you have written down some of these early things, and I know you're continuing to work on histories for welfare, too. We thank you for being here today.
Oh, there's 100 books in there. That one book's full, but there's plenty to keep learning, but we need to teach.
Sister Beck, as we close the program, would you mind sharing your testimony about Relief Society and how the work of Relief Society is expressed in welfare work?
The purposes of Relief Society, we know, are to increase faith and personal righteousness, strengthen families and homes, and seek out and help those who are in need. Now, those are all interconnected. You can't increase your faith and your righteousness if you're not seeking out those who are in need. It's just not possible. You can't sit home and massage your own faith if you're not helping other people. It's impossible to strengthen your own home and the homes of others if you're not seeking out and helping those who are in need. As you do that work, your faith increases, your righteousness increases, you become more like the Savior, you develop His qualities in your life. As you're helping other people, your own home is strengthened and the other homes are strengthened in the ward. So those purposes which prepare us for eternal life are interrelated. You can't pull them apart, really. But that's Relief Society work.
That's right on target.
Sister Julie Beck and Elder Glenn L. Rudd, thank you both so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much. It's been a great pleasure.
You've been listening to the Mormon Channel Relief Society program. For more information on this program, visit our website at radio.lds.org. To share your story or an experience with the Mormon Channel, email us at radio@ldschurch.org. Thanks for listening.